This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, a new twist on the ancient idea of food as medicine. First up, a lot of the reporting on the heroin crisis is focused on the tragic aspects of the epidemic, leaving people feeling helpless and hopeless as though there's no end in sight. A local organization, the Urban Minority Alcohol and Drug Abuse Outreach Program, says getting out a message of help and hope is equally as important as telling the story of risk and loss. Dr. Camaria Tihemba is the executive director of the Urban Minority Alcohol and Drug Abuse Outreach Program. She and Hamilton County Commissioner Denise Driehaus join us this afternoon. And you can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Commissioner Driehaus, thank you for being here today.
Yeah, thanks good for to having see you. Me.
And good afternoon, Dr. Tihemba.
Thank you for being here as well.
Good afternoon. What kind of progress have we made in this area in terms of dealing with the heroin epidemic and the opioid crisis?
Well, we are making some progress by way of the Hamilton County Heroin Coalition, which is a collective group of intervention, law enforcement, treatment, and prevention, trying to bring people together to make sure we're connecting the dots and getting people, saving lives and getting people into treatment, which is really primarily what our focus has been. We've also pulled in the hospitals through the Health Collaborative. We've pulled in the faith community. We've pulled in other elected officials to make sure that we are rounding out the group to be the most effective we can be. And so we're trying to connect the dots and draw down resources to continue our work.
Dr. Tihemba, how important is collaboration in dealing with this issue?
Oh, it's absolutely important. There's no way that one of us is going to solve this problem. This problem is bigger than any of us. And we see the results. We see the positive results that the Heroin Coalition is spearheading as well. You know, so there's no way that we can work around collaboration.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the challenges that we still face, Commissioner Driehaus?
Well, resources are primarily the biggest challenge that we have. We have had some success in drawing down federal dollars. The county has committed dollars, the city and the state, but it's just not enough. We are saving lives. We are doing the work we need to do, but we have to have the capacity by way of treatment to make sure that when we have someone that's ready for treatment, we can quickly get them into a facility, because there is this window by which, you know, they are willing to go. They're not using again. And so we have to capture them during that window and make sure we've got the capacity and treatment.
How tough is it to get people into treatment, Dr. Tihemba? It seems like there might be a stigma attached to this that might keep people from seeking out help.
Oh, absolutely. Folks are very fearful of treatment. It's the unknown. It's also a commitment. So people don't want to be associated with something that other people call as a deficit. So, you know, they get shamed about it. Guilt is always there of stopping them. And then, you know, they don't want to know what the unintentional consequences might be in getting into treatment. So it becomes very, very difficult. Even when you have someone who goes to the hospital and the hospital is referring someone to treatment, They're afraid of that as well. And so we have to have a very nurturing and loving environment to say this is truly a disease. It's a disease, it's a brain disease, and treatment works, and people do recover. And here are some examples. We have to show some examples sometimes of where folks have survived this disease.
So you talk about getting out that message of help and hope. Talk about some more about why that is equally as important as telling the story about the problem that exists and the loss and the despair that occurs because of it.
Well, you know, when you hear the negative stories, people hear that constantly, and they really, frankly, become very desensitized to the whole issue. They see it as like no humans involved. However, when you show real live people that are successful, that strives for success, and that treatment really do work, then you get another level of commitment from not just the person and their family, but also from the community. So it is very important to let people know that treatment works, people do recover, they become part of the workforce, they become part of your, you know, the real lives, and none of us escapes the negative effects of someone else's addiction. We all suffer, whether it's through employment, whether it's through driving while you're intoxicated. There's no way around it that us as a community are not going to be affected by it.
Right. It impacts so many people. The effects are so widespread.
And the systems. I mean, at the county level, think about the jails, think about the foster care system, think about the mental health system. all the strains when you have people in this community that are addicted and we are unable to respond to it, you know, in the volume that we need to, all these systems then become strained. It's no coincidence that this coalition is a county coalition, because so much of what the county does is provide services, and those systems are now strained because of the heroin epidemic. One other thing, I just want to follow up on what Camaria said. The stigma is significant in this community. And we are trying to break down those barriers and say, you know, this is a disease of the brain. This is not a moral, some kind of flaw. People become addicted a lot of times because of prescription drugs. And so we need to start talking about the stigma and start talking about this by way of the folks that have recovered, and put a face on it and make sure that people understand that these are real people in our community. We all know these people, and we need to be part of their recovery.
And that's a really excellent point. They are our neighbors. They're our physicians. They're our bus drivers. Mm-hmm. There's no way that we are going through life on a daily basis and someone around us, whether we know it or not, is not affected by this disease firsthand.
So this covers a lot of different socioeconomic categories, doesn't it?
It certainly do. Addiction does not discriminate, and this disease is certainly not discriminating.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation, or you can email us, talk@wvxu.org. How accessible is treatment in our area?
Well, we have a great system here in Hamilton County. We have some county providers. We have gotten to, we've come together where we are providing services 7 days a week. And so there is an agency open on the weekends when traditionally no one was open. Humanite Works is open every Saturday. And there's other organizations that work Saturday and Sundays now. So contrary to popular belief, treatment is accessible and warm handoff treatment. So if you want to, if someone in the hospital, call an agency, the likelihood of them being able to send someone over there through our total system to bring that person to take that person to treatment is a high percentage of probability. And so it is accessible. Mm-hmm. We're working very hard through the coalition of making sure those things are accessible.
Well, and the other thing, you know, so some of the folks are being captured in the hospitals who have been treated there and are ready for release. The other way we're getting folks into treatment is through the quick response teams. That is a collection of treatment, law enforcement, and fire going out to someone's home. If they refuse the transport to the hospital after an overdose, over half of the folks do refuse the transport, then we have that information. So we're going out to their homes to try to get them into treatment through the quick response teams.
And that's modeled after what they started, I think it was
Coleraine
Township.
Yeah, we've got one in Coleraine, Pricel, Norwood, and we are currently trying to get a countywide QRT off the ground. We're going to get there. I think it'll happen after the first of the year. The idea is that we have hot spots outside of Coleraine, Pricel, and Norwood, and you can see, we get these daily maps, and you can see the hot spots light up on the mats. We need to have a team that can traverse the county, go anywhere where these hot spots are popping up, and provide the quick response teams and the access to treatment in those communities.
513-419-7100, and Dr. Sawyer joins us now. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Will Sawyer, family doc. So I see families, and it's devastating to the families. So I've been impressed by, I actually was on the OKI committee for a little while and dropped off, but there's a Vivitrol utilization for reducing cravings, and it's very expensive, only if you have a Medicaid or the money to pay for it, but it certainly could be very beneficial, and if somebody looks at the big picture, it may save the county and the city and all of us in healthcare a lot of money because of reducing the craving, recidivism, et cetera, et cetera. Has anybody looked at that to help break down barriers for access?
I think countywide we are using Vivitrol, particularly in our jails, but also Suboxone. So we are using medication-assisted treatment, yes, sir.
And those are medications that they reduce the desire for the drug?
Yeah, they're blockers. They reduce the cravings, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're starting to use Vivitrol in the jail.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And what are some of the other ways of treating addiction to opioids?
Well, it's real important to couple medication-assisted treatment with therapy. And so there's individual therapy, group therapy, family therapy. So we're wrapping services completely around people. We're providing them recovery coaches to help them navigate through the system so that they can be successful. You know, we take a lot of for granted. We take for granted that a parent knows how to interact with the school and for the best interest of their child, but not necessarily so. They may have been using so that they don't have those skills, and maybe they never acquired those skills. We take for granted that someone knows how to go find a job or apply for housing. And we shouldn't be taking those things for granted. What we do know is the better the skill level of a person who goes into recovery, the better the recovery will be. And so we have taken an approach, a holistic approach, to give them everything that they need, including someone to help navigate.
Now, how important is it to engage young people?
Oh, prevention is extremely important. First of all, we have to not be an ostrich with our head in the sand. Our children do know what's going on, and they know what's available. And generally, if you ask a child who have maybe smoked marijuana, had a drink or whatever, where was that and how did you have access to it? They'll tell you, in their homes, right? So the first place that most young people experiment with drugs is out of their home. And so we want to educate them and give them good decision-making skills. We want to empower young people to be able to say, no, this is not what I'm going to do, and I'm going to promote this disease being arrested. And, you know, so that is so critical. I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah, you actually have a youth-led coalition in your organization.
Oh, we do, and it's so powerful. It's so powerful. Our young people come from all different schools throughout the Hamilton County area. They are from grade 7 to 12. They lead their own initiatives. They give annual youth summits each year. Our children are very powerful. Oftentimes we hear a lot of negative things about young people, but I tell you, there is a lot of positive things going on with our young people.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, Denise?
That's awesome. So we passed a law a few years ago in the legislature. I actually was the author of the bill with Robert Sprague to make sure that we are teaching about the dangers of addiction in schools as part of the health curriculum. It was embraced by school boards across the state, about the education community. And so that is happening. I mean, I think there has been a slow ramp up to do some of that. But we need to teach kids about the dangers of addiction. It's not only heroin. It's fentanyl, carfentanil, cocaine, crack, all the rest of it. We need to expand the knowledge base as to, you know, what these kids are experiencing, what they're looking at, and the long-term dangers of getting involved in that. And we're doing that in schools. And Prevention First and Camarilla has been part of this, are going literally into the schools as outside groups to make sure that the kids understand the dangers of addiction.
Yes, Humanopolis is probably in about 9 different schools. And so we do provide just a wealth of information to young people. You know, it's really important that you don't go into an environment and talk with children and say, well, this is bad, that is bad, because you're saying your mother's bad, your father's bad, right? So what we're doing is allowing them to make conclusions about behaviors that are not good, make conclusions about decisions that are not good. And so that tends to be much more successful than alienating and isolating young people.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Dr. Camarilla Tayemba, Executive Director of the Urban Minority Alcohol and Drug Abuse Outreach Program, and Hamilton County Commissioner Denise Driehaus, as we talk about our region's ongoing battle against heroin and opioids. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Camarilla, there's a picture on the WVXU website. It's of a woman who took part in a makeover event that UMADOP sponsored. Tell us about that event. Tell us about the impact that has.
Oh, my goodness. That was just so exciting. It was December the 4th. And what we did, we brought in professional hairstylists and barbers and makeup artists, and they provided haircuts and facials to our clients. And it was just so fabulous. First of all, you know, another opportunity to not take something for granted is that you assume that everybody has had a haircut before. But one gentleman said, he was about 30 years old, he had never had a professional haircut. And that was just like so powerful. And then another lady said, wow, you're going to make me love myself. And we really do want you to love yourself. It is so much power in loving yourself. And so if nothing else made that day, those two statements certainly made that day. But It was quite a few clients there, and we had brunch. Well, we had hors d'oeuvres, and it was just awesome. It was fabulous. The clients came from, were clients of Humidop, and they can't wait till next year. It was just so exciting. The energy was just so high. It was really fabulous.
And it's all part of that the hope, right? Giving people hope.
It is. It is. You know, when you start doing some things for yourself, particularly in recovery, you got to work on the inside, but you also got to work on the outside. And so that was an opportunity to work on the outside. And it was just amazing, you know, just to be able to teach a skill, show folks that they could really look pretty and look beautiful. And they really did. They looked really beautiful. They did.
513-419-7100. Let's talk to Alan. Hi, Alan, you're on. We must have lost Alan. Alan had a question about the Alexander technique. He's wondering if you've heard of it and its effectiveness in terms of curbing addiction and treating addiction.
I'm sorry, I've never heard of it.
Okay, so not familiar with that one. Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. What are some of the other success stories that you've seen?
You know, we have people getting custody of their children. That's amazing. You know, anytime you lose a child, I mean, it becomes unspeakable, unbearable. But we have had men and women recovering, being sober, getting custody of their children. We have had several people who have never had a work history actually obtain jobs. I mean, living wage jobs, jobs of $15 an hour and $16 an hour, not just a $5 or $6 an hour job. We have had grandparents who were able to bring not only their adult children into a situation, but also their grandchildren. You know, and it speaks volumes when you have a grandparent who's used for 40 years to get sober. That encourages their children to do some things differently and encourages their grandchildren to do some things differently. And we have seen that. We actually have two generations of clients right now in our program. And they work really well together because, you know, they use together. And so they getting sober together.
Mm-hmm. Glenn called and his comment is addiction has become a big business. And he says, is profit one of the reasons it's so hard to fight the drug battle?
I wouldn't say it's profit. I wouldn't at all. Of course, you do have someone, you know, facilities popping up and trying to profit off of it. But we're in the business of saving lives. And so it's just not a number. It's a real person that we're talking about.
Yeah, I think the profit side is the folks that are making and dealing the drugs. I mean, that's what the profit motive is. And some of the folks that are making the fentanyl and carfentanyl are obviously making some profit off those synthetic drugs that are coming in. They're very powerful. They can be deadly. And someone asked me, well, that's a terrible business model if you've got people dying from the synthetics you're making. But the challenge is that the high is so powerful that people are willing to use that over and over again if they can survive it. And so people are making money off the addiction. One thing I want to remind folks of, when you talk about success stories, we are in the middle of a project here in Hamilton County. We're the only county that has received free Narcan from Adapt Pharma, the pharmaceutical company that makes Narcan. We got 25,000 doses to distribute throughout the county for a two-year time frame. So we're going and distributing far and wide, you know, in the jails and the treatment centers. And, you know, we're trying to expand into the faith community and into potentially schools to make sure people have Narcan on the belt, as I like to say. Have it available in case they encounter someone who has overdosed, because we are saving lives in Hamilton County. Now, we are also losing lives, which is the other side of the coin. But we had over 400 deaths last year. We are going to have over 400 deaths. I think we already do this year. But the amount of lives lost would have been so much higher had we not had life-saving Narcan in this community. And so we are in a pilot program right now. We're doing predictive analytics through UC. And so just like they do with crime fighting, they're trying to predict where people might use and who might overdose and get to them before they do. And so it's kind of cutting edge stuff, but there are really good and powerful strategies happening in Hamilton County.
And I really appreciate the question about profit, but it's not a choice. People who are using opium-based drugs, they are not choosing to use it. Not using it is so much more painful than to use it. And so what happens, because it's a brain disease, it affects your sense of reasoning, it affects your impulse, and that craving is just so powerful. So, you know, we're in the business of saving lives, and we're not, it's strictly because we understand the nature of this disease, not just this disease of opium-based drugs, but addiction in itself. You know, people can survive addiction with assistance. And so that's why we're there. We're there to provide assistance.
Let's talk to Sarah. Good afternoon, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. Go right ahead.
Good. I would just wanted to touch on the recovery community in this area. I have 5 years clean off of heroin, and I wouldn't have even begun to know where to start if it wasn't for the NA and AA community and the tri-state area. I live in Florence, but, you know, the start of my recovery was in Cincinnati, and I have since moved over to the northern Kentucky area, and I've been to meetings all around the country, and we have it good here with AA and NA. It's free. There's a meeting right down the road from you, probably, you know, and I've made so many friends, so many people I can call in the middle of the night if I need to, and I know that there have been studies done, you know, that have connected a desire for connectedness in regards to addiction. And I've never felt more connected in my life. People care about me. They want to know how I'm doing. If I don't show up to a meeting, hey, where were you? Are you doing okay? And I think that's just been crucial to, you know, as far as looking for a real solution. Mm-hmm. I do believe this is a disease, and I also believe it's a spiritual. There's a spiritual void, you know, and I don't call that necessarily God, Jesus, anything, but I feel that we can help fill that for each other through our experience and just sharing that.
Sarah, thank you so much. We appreciate the call. And
she's absolutely right. There are lots of studies that talk about Maslow hierarchy of needs. So one of our greatest needs is the need for love. And so what happens is that you do develop communities, even when you're in treatment. The folks that you go through treatment with, they become a part of your family. NA and AA is an excellent program in our area. And so you couple that with treatment, you couple that with family support, you couple that with change, and it is just awesome.
And actually, there are two things to take away from that. One is that this is a regional issue. And so we are sharing information with Northern Kentucky, with Indiana, trying to learn, in Claremont County, trying to learn from one another. And the other piece is that, you know, and Camaria touched on it earlier, this to get someone through recovery is to go through detox, to go through treatment, and then to have ongoing support. And without any of those in place, you oftentimes don't achieve recovery. And so the support piece is ongoing. It's a lifetime.
It is a lifetime.
And you have to have it because people need to connect. They need that kind of support. We see that in the recovery pod. In the jail, we've got a women's recovery pod, and they tell you about the spiritual experience of talking to one another. They felt like they were alone in their addiction. They are no longer alone. And it is powerful to hear their stories and how they continue to communicate with each other even after they get out of the jail.
And they're no longer judged.
That's
and
right.
That's a real big deal, is being judged, particularly for women. Women don't use the same. Women don't recover the same. So it's real important to make sure that things are available to specialized populations.
Kevin joins us. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Hi. I just have a question about the effect of marijuana, especially recreational medical marijuana laws, on opiate addictions and recidivism as far as addiction is concerned.
Well, right now we have not had anyone with a prescription for medication for marijuana, so we can't say. I think the judge is out.
Okay, Elaine. Hi, Elaine.
Yeah. Hi. I have a 93-year-old mother who's used opiates for years for legitimate reasons, but I don't think she needs them anymore, but it's really hard to get her help to taper off them. And I haven't found that doctors seem to know much about how opiates affect the elderly mind. I think she has a lot of sensory problems that I don't think are anything other than the opiates. I wondered if you had a resource to somebody that really knows the elderly and opiates. Hmm.
I think it's true what you're saying, and geriatric populations are very different and unique. I don't know a person or organization that actually concentrate on geriatrics, but certainly if you called, I forgot the group name.
Right. Well, I'm thinking the Adams Board of Mental or a Greater Cincinnati Behavioral or Addiction Services or Talbert House. I mean, all of those. That's an interesting question. I've never heard anybody talk about this in terms of the elderly because it's usually young people or folks in the middle ages. But, you know, you hit on something where we have a community of physicians who have been told in the past one of the ways we're going to measure your success is how well you alleviate our pain. And so they overprescribed in some cases opioids. Now, what you're talking about is a legitimate long-term chronic use of opioids for medical necessity. But getting someone off that, I don't, you know, there are, so I would call Talbert House. I mean, they do have a bead on these kinds of things and might be able to refer you on.
Well, I was thinking Senior Services. I think Talbert House and UMIDOP have the same resources. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's it. But I think that, not that something wrong with Talbert House, is not. Mm-hmm. But I think that for the geriatric population, I think we need to look at those who lead the population in the first place, at the Senior Services.
Or Council on Aging.
Oh, Council on Aging. That's the one I was trying to think of, Council on Aging. Yeah. I think that's where we need to first go.
Now, you had a recent meeting with the director of the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, Tracy Plouk. Mm-hmm. Right. So what was the purpose of the meeting? Why was she in Cincinnati?
It was twofold. When we invited her down, one was to get her perspective on how they are dealing with this issue at the state level. And the other is to make sure that she understands all of what we're doing in Hamilton County and our need for additional resources. You know, in the state budget, there was purportedly $176 million set aside to tackle the heroin epidemic throughout the state. Unfortunately, Hamilton County saw very little of those dollars. Some of them were used to build treatment facilities. Some of it was used to provide access. So much of it went to the rural areas. And I acknowledge that there are issues in the rural areas, and I don't mean to diminish that. But the population is so much higher here in Hamilton County that I think we were hoping that we would get more resources, again, to save lives and provide treatment and access to treatment. So we wanted to make sure that we were doing all that we could to advocate, or kind of make our case and advocate for Hamilton County and get her perspective as to what we could do differently or why those dollars went to other places. So it was a productive meeting. It was good to hear from Tracy. She heard from us, and it was a dialogue that we needed to have.
That sounds like funding is a huge, huge
issue. It's a huge issue.
Now, are you talking about the 21st Century Cures funding?
We got some Cures money. We got some CARA money. The city has kicked in $200,000. We expanded the hotline with Addiction Services. We are, you know, expanding the QRTs, as we talked about earlier. But we are also in the capital budget cycle, which is ramping up right now at the state level. We are hoping to secure some funding to retrofit the jail to accommodate some treatment beds, because we do have a facility where we have people who are addicted in the facility. It's the jail. Now, whether or not they're being appropriately treated in the jail is a whole nother thing. So we're trying to make sure we have appropriate treatment for those that suffer addiction or mental health issues in the jail and try to treat them so that they don't come back to the facility.
And I think Tracy left with a much more clearer understanding of how dynamic Hamilton County is.
Have time for one more phone call here. Let's talk to Lauren. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
So I actually work in addictions. I'm an employment specialist. So my focus is actually helping people in active addiction and recovery maintain employment. And, you know, it's evidence-based that if we can get them a job that they're passionate about, that actually helps keep them in sobriety for like a lot longer. So I just wanted to pass that on, that very important that they're given, you know, a second chance with their legal history to, you know, get into an employment situation that, you know, helps them feel empowered.
Hey, Lauren, thank you for the call.
She's absolutely right. We have to look at the whole person and make sure that we're tending to the whole person.
Employment and housing. I would add housing to that equation too. Yeah.
And good medical care.
It's really stability. We need to provide stability for folks.
Yeah.
How optimistic are both of you that we're making good progress, that we're going to see some things turn around here?
Oh, I'm very optimistic. You know, this is my passion. This is my life. And so it's important that, you know, we stay on target. But I think that we're going in the right direction.
We are saving lives. We need to do more on the treatment end, but we are making progress as a collective. The coalition is this great collective organization. I want to credit everybody on that coalition. We are saving lives, and we are getting people into treatment. We just need to do more of it.
Commissioner Driehaus and Dr. Tayemba, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Camaria Tayemba, Executive Director of the Urban Minority Alcohol and Drug Abuse Outreach Program, and Hamilton County Commissioner Denise Driehaus.